You're tuned into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C. at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. At the top of the show, we share a tidbit of what we're reading or learning, and then we dive deeper into that tidbit of knowledge with our in-studio guests. What I love learning about in the food industry is the intersection of history, culture, and community. And I want to talk about this particular moment in time, dating back to World War I, actually. There was this idea of a victory garden. Victory gardens, also called war gardens or food gardens for defense, were vegetable, fruit, and herb gardens planted at private residences and public parks in the U.S. and other countries around the world during the World War I and World War II era. And they were used along with rationing stamps and cards to reduce pressure on the public food supply. Besides indirectly aiding the war effort, these gardens were also considered civil morale boosters in that the gardeners could feel empowered by their contribution of labor and rewarded by the produce grown. This made victory gardens a part of daily life on the home front. So I was wondering, how has this piece of history evolved over time? Well, I recently learned today more than 20 million veterans live in the U.S., a few who have served as early as World War II, and many have served as recently as Afghanistan. And more than 44% of the men and women who serve our country have roots in small towns and rural communities dotted across the country. And as they make their transition from military back to civilian life, many veterans choose agriculture for their profession. Some return to family farm operations, others strike new ground. And to help these farm veterans differentiate and market their products, there's an amazing program by Farm Credit and the Farmer Veteran Coalition. They've been partnering on the Homegrown by Heroes program, a voluntary marketing label for farmer veterans. And more than 1,350 veterans across the country use the Homegrown by Heroes label to provide consumers this tangible way to support veterans in the marketplace. And the program also has partnered with 20 state departments of agriculture to promote the program alongside their respective buy local labels. And I am thrilled to say that today in studio, we welcome Gary Madison from the Farm Credit Council, the trade association for the nationwide farm credit system. He is an advocate for young, beginning, small, and minority farmer outreach programs. And you're also responsible for spreading best practices for beginning farmer lending and training among the Farm Credit Associations, and that could range from training sessions in business leadership, governance, financial skills. I'm just thrilled to dive deeper into this with you, Gary. And we are also welcoming Cal Riggleman, the owner of Big Rigs Farm, an idea that was born on the sandy desert of Iraq in 2003. On your first deployment with the United States Marine Corps, and now is currently an operation that's a part of the Homegrown by Heroes program. We are going to take a quick break, and then we are going to be back with both Gary and Cal. You're listening to The Tidbit, and we're here with Gary from the Farm Credit Council and Cal of Big Rigs Farm. Hello, both of you.
How you doing?
Hey, Kim.
Thank you for being here. We are excited to discuss the importance of Homegrown by Heroes. And before diving into the nitty-gritty of the program, on The Tidbit, we like to open with the foundations of your story and your journey to date. So, Cal, patriotism is definitely a strong theme in your journey. And the idea that people know where their food comes from and that it's nearby, it's very important to you. And I want to know that intersection a bit more. You've honorably served our country in the Marines, and so I'm wondering, what does it mean to you to be a veteran farmer?
I think it's a great opportunity to number one, be a farmer, and then also to be a veteran, to serve my country and to just give, you know, just to, I wrote a blank check, you know, and there it was, and, you know, I did my time, and then I came home, and or while I was deployed, mm-hmm. everybody I was with was telling I was telling them about my family's farm and how we sold everything right on Route 50 in West Virginia.
Wow.
And I never even heard of a farmer's market until I was in Iraq, and these guys are telling me about, you know, this is what I should try to do when I come home. Because working for my grandparents, I got paid like $6 an hour, and that's all I was going to get paid until somebody died in my family, because nothing had changed and since 1940 till 2003, you know, mm-hmm. they grew the same crops. They sold them, you know, prices really hadn't gone up, but all the expenses have gone up.
Yeah.
Like buying equipment and everything like that. So they're the ones that told me I should do farmers markets.
That's so interesting. So that camaraderie that you had while abroad serving, right. hearing the different perspectives from your colleagues,
right.
they then influence you to say, no, farmers markets, a totally different diversified revenue stream.
Right, right.
That's
yeah, because you're selling directly to the customer. I mean, we were selling directly to the customer in West Virginia, but it's a lot different because people were buying bushels of peaches for, you know, $12 a half bushel. And then at the farmers market, they sell for, you know, $2.50 a pound.
Mm.
You know, that's like $70 instead of $12. Like,
yeah.
it's just a big, big difference, you know, down here because people just buy, you know, what they want to eat for the day or for the week instead of like canning and putting away stuff for the winter.
That is really interesting. And to understand the consumer difference
right.
between both of those populations.
Right.
That's amazing. And Gary, you yourself have more than 30 years experience in farming and agriculture industry. And for quite some time, you were actually a small farmer as well. And so I'm wondering, at the Farm Credit Council, you train young farmers on farm business startups, financial skills in particular. What would you say you found to be the most important characteristics or skills an entrepreneur in agriculture can possess?
I think the most important thing a beginning farmer needs is drive. They've mm-hmm. got to really want to accomplish something. It's not easy to find it within yourself to get up every morning, you know, often before the sun comes up, staying until the work is done. And that kind of commitment to keep on working and have a definite idea of what success means and what it is, so that you've got clear goals and you can you can work all day long and you know you've done something. That's, you know, now that I work in D.C., I shouldn't say it this way, but I push electrons around on a screen most of the time. And it's a lot less satisfying than getting fingernails dirty seeing a row that's weeded or, a part of the crop that's harvested and packaged and ready for sale. It's different kind of life.
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about this a lot recently, about how we are a very outcomes-based society and that we put so much attachment on the final product as opposed to the journey leading up to the final product. And I've always been in so much admiration of farmers because, sure, you have a goal, you have that drive of what that successful season may look like, but weather comes your way. Like, just all these things could possibly derail you. And really, it's more about, how have I lived in the present moment day to day to know that I'm accomplishing that goal? I think that's something I've always found so inspirational. And I think it also ties back to, what does it mean to be a young veteran in particular in the industry? I have a feeling a lot of those skills overlap. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. The first thing I'll say is, it's not just about following orders, because there's a lot of creativity that's required. But the idea of being loyal to the job, that's another way of saying commitment. the idea of being a risk taker and being kind of fearless while you're doing it is a common element for both farmers and those who serve in the military. And I think that both farmers and those in the military have to have a real underlying sense of optimism that things are going to go right. Mm-hmm. And if things do go a little bit off track, they're going to be able to fix it and make it right. It's solving problems on the go in an environment where change is what happens always. And to me, that's where farming and serving in the military intersect.
Yeah, it sounds like a mindset shift almost. And how do you develop that mental resiliency and fortitude? I wonder, in your time, Cal, serving in the military, were you able, I guess I should say, are there certain best practices that you started doing to establish that mindset of optimism? Because I imagine things were thrown your way and you were like, oh no.
I guess growing up on a farm too, I had an advantage because, you know, like Gary was saying, you know, like you work until the job's done, you know, you work 7 days a week, just depending on what season it is. And, you know, Mother Nature's your boss.
Right.
And she's relentless.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't care about you. That's
right.
That's what I tell a lot of people.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can't control the weather. You know, if you get too much rain, things will rot. If you get not enough rain, things won't grow. And then just the ability to adapt and overcome. You know, that's one of the Marine Corps, like, phrases, you know, that was pounded into our heads. And, you know, being in the military is very similar to being in agriculture, just because of all the unknown factors that happen, and you have to adjust and, you know, continue on to make sure the mission's complete.
Totally.
Yeah.
Your family's actually been in farming for 8 generations.
That's
right. Wow. But it wasn't until you were serving in the Marines that you started producing more value-added products, like you mentioned. You were growing peaches or
yeah, my grandparents have fruit. They have orchards.
Amazing.
So apples, peaches, cherries, plums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then once you were coming back, you decided to expand your product mix. And so with that, it also increased your distribution channels, as we were talking about.
Right.
So you went from this fruit stand in West Virginia selling your produce and products to Northern Virginia farmers markets.
Right.
And then at select Whole Foods market locations.
Right.
And other locally owned businesses, and a little bit online too.
That's right.
Wow. And so this genesis of the expansion, how have you seen it over time grow and evolve? I mean, you came back and what? Like, sort of walk us through what happened.
Right. So what really happened when I came back was I came back, you know, the guys gave me the idea that I should do this when I come home. And I thought it was a great idea, but I like 100% was not. You know, that was what I was going to do. Like, mm-hmm. I was going to come home and just work in the orchard and, you know, just that was what I was going to do.
Right.
So I came home with a little bit of money saved up from being deployed in Iraq. And I partied and blew every cent that I had.
Oh, no.
Right. And that's what they told you not to do.
Yeah, man.
So I woke up in Arlington after
sure,
right,
as one does,
right, in my friend's hotel or my friend's apartment hallway. They drugged me inside and like, man, you gotta get yourself together.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So I went to the ATM and I had I didn't have enough money in my bank account to pay for the ATM fee. It was I had like $1.70 and it was $2 for the ATM fee. So anyway, I get back to my friend's place and tell them I got no gas, no money, and they give me a roll of quarters.
Okay.
To buy gas. So I get home, $10 worth of gas, and I'm like, man, what are you going to do now?
Right.
So I went, and it was peach season, and there was a commercial kitchen about 20 miles from our farm.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, so I took a truckload of peaches to this kitchen that makes jams and jellies and sauces and stuff, and I got peach jam made and took it back to my grandparents' fruit stand, and within a couple weeks sold all of it and doubled my money.
Wow.
And I was like, man, I need to look into this farmer's market idea. So I applied for a few markets, got more peach jam made, apple butter made, and then sold all of it before my grandparents' fruit stand closes for the winter, and applied to three farmers markets in Loudoun County and got into them.
Fantastic.
So then I started getting more jarred stuff made and helped make it, and then started baking like breads and pies and stuff so I could have something to sell at the markets when it first started. And then I decided to grow vegetables instead of plus the fruit that my grandparents have. So I started growing an acre of vegetables and selling at the farmers markets, at the three markets that we were in. And then it's just grown since then.
Wow. And it's not just jams, jellies, breads, pies. You're even doing other value added. Is there spirits?
That's right. We just built a distillery, and we've been open for about a year and a half now.
What is at the distillery?
We have like a clear corn whiskey, peach moonshine, it'd be classified as a peach brandy. We have raspberry, nachino, which is black walnut, a naughty oak, which is, we were aging it in oak chips.
Wow.
So it tastes like a young whiskey. And apple pie is our most popular.
Spirit?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, listener, we're going to all have to take a trip to your distillery. We are going to take a quick break. We're sitting down with Cal of Big Rigs Farm and Gary from the Farm Credit Council. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. We are sitting down with Gary from the Farm Credit Council and Cal of Big Rig Farm. A strong belief of ours at Curate is that over time, we will begin seeing consumers vote with their purchasing dollars even more so than we are today. And recognizing that where your food is grown and who is producing it and who's benefiting from that supply chain is really going to matter. It's just something I hold very close to, like, my core identity and what I've built a business based on. I think people are going to want to see how their dollar is impacting the local community. And so, Gary, the Farm Credit Council has partnered with the Farmer Veteran Coalition to make Homegrown by Heroes program, which is a voluntary marketing label for farmer veterans available nationwide. So can you tell us a little more about the label and how farmers are using it today?
Yeah, you know, it's easy to see for somebody like Cal who can bring his Homegrown by Heroes sign and hang it in the market, and he doesn't have to stand there each time a sale is happening and say, you know, I was a veteran. You know, I was a veteran.
Mm.
And it communicates something to people that they really want to know and Cal doesn't necessarily really want to say. Right?
That's interesting. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that, you know, recognizing the humility of most veterans, and they don't call themselves a hero. We've had some real pushback by having the name Homegrown by Heroes because veterans will say, well, I wasn't a hero. And, you know, from our standpoint, supporting the label, it's because other people think you're a hero, and just go with the flow and let them love you.
Yeah.
And to have it, you know, the intersection of farmers and veterans is a really warm and safe place. You know, that may sound a little bit fuzzy, but people like that. And with the whole local food, the fact that people are interested in local food is really based on communication, so that the consumers' desires are known by the farmer can adjust. That message in the conventional food system doesn't get from consumer back to farmer because it's got to go through a lot of other processors and
absolutely,
people.
Yeah.
Cal can stand there and listen to what somebody is saying about how they really like those eggplants with the funny white stripes or whatever it is, and he knows he's going to grow more of them. And it's that communication between the farmer and the consumer that makes the value. And the way we look at it at Farm Credit is that's a real economic value.
Mm.
We lend a lot of money as a resource to people like Cal that want to go into the business of supplying those local food needs. And it's a real expansion in opportunity in farming.
Yeah, that's supply and demand matching. We work with a lot of buyers at Curate who, it's not even necessarily about the product being produced, but they want to know the individual who is producing that product. And a lot of times it could be a woman-owned business or a person of color-owned business, which you may think is more easily identifiable possibly than a veteran-owned business. And so I think that this is such a fantastic program because you're right, being able to put to call out this special characteristic and individuality of the person producing the product is so important. Cal, what has having this access to the label meant for you and your business?
It's been great. Just like he was saying, the logo is so simple and basic that everybody can look at it and tell exactly what it means or what it stands for. And people are very appreciative of, you know, the fact, knowing that they're buying stuff from me because I was a veteran and so forth. And then a lot of my customers, like in Alexandria, are still in the military that come and shop there. You know, and they, you know, they prefer to buy from us because, you know, they're in the military, I was in the military, you know, it's and then just being at the farmers markets and having a connection with your customers. Like, since I've been at some of these markets for years now, I've seen people come as boyfriend and girlfriend and then married and then now they have kids and they make me hold their babies and get pictures taken with them because I, you know, they're like, this is a Big Rigs baby.
Yeah, you've been feeding them, that. Right. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so just things like that, that's with the beautiful. Connection with the customers is like really great.
Yeah, and you probably did not know them before, but no. You found that kindred spirit
right
over this logo
right
because of your identity.
Right.
That's amazing. And to, I guess, dive a little deeper into that, Gary, as you know, I mean, like we've been talking about, there's been this huge movement towards buying local in cities, I mean, across the region, but I would say even in urban areas, it's been more top of mind. Maybe it's disposable income. It could be just people wanting to connect with community that sometimes urban centers are lacking a bit more. And so for our listeners who are interested in pursuing a farm startup, getting out of the city and connecting back with the rural land, how have you seen the landscape change over the past few decades? And what do they need to keep in mind as they put together a business plan in today's environment?
Well, the main thing you just said it is put together a business plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mm-hmm. kind of have to have an expectation of what you're going to put into it and what you expect to get out of it. And, you know, do you have to make money? Do you have to make a lot of money doing some sort of farm business? No, but you have to know what you're expecting and have clear goals so that you don't wake up one day and decide, gosh, I've spent my retirement 401k and now I think I'll have to go work again or something like that. So having a plan is absolutely essential. And like Cal found out in Iraq, you got to know who you're going to sell to. And that people, I think, frequently think, well, you know, I'm going to grow great stuff and they'll beat a path to my door to buy it. Well, people need help. They need help selling their stuff. That's, you know, that's the reason for the Homegrown by Heroes label. And that's an essential part when you enter into consumer-based agriculture. It's essential to have a marketing plan because from a lender standpoint, somebody like Cal, it doesn't really matter what he's growing as a product. What matters is that he's got access to an earnings stream to a place where he can take whatever it is that he grows, whatever the customers want. Mm. And to a lender, it doesn't matter so much what he's going to grow. That's up to Cal. What's important is that he knows how to maintain that access to the market, how to make those customers happy, and how to promote his product so that he can get a premium in the marketplace.
Absolutely. And I think even beyond just the direct-to-consumer, then also working with smaller restaurant chains or cafes or even maybe boutique hotels, understanding their demand needs. Yeah. And so that way you can maybe forecast your plotting process and growing season so that you can meet the demand that they already have.
I have to say it, the real best advice that I give to people who want to go into farming is don't quit your day job.
Okay.
You know, the idea that you can have an income and do something as you learn about it and learn all of those markets, approach it that way. you don't have to be a full-time farmer all at once.
Yeah.
It's best to get there a little bit at a time.
That is a very important point. I feel that in a lot of cities, people are wearing three hats at the same time. They have their day job, and then maybe they're an Uber driver, and then they're also a farmer, right? Like, we're in this gig economy where people are just, they identify as a different hat they're wearing depending on the crowd that they're in. And so you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more that you need to be able to take the risk out of living out your dream by sort of market research and testing things before you go full in. I'm with you. Cal, do you have any sort of best practices that you would give someone? I'm going to say a millennial farmer, someone who's younger, who may want to get into the business.
I would highly recommend, if you're really interested in farming, to go and work on a farm.
Yes, preach.
If it's just for a little bit, just give yourself to that farm and say, I'm yours. Like, whatever you do, I want to do. Like, start at the bottom, because that's where you're going to learn the most. Not walking around looking at stuff. Like, yeah, go pick some green beans. See how long you last.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I did with my kids on the farm, is I gave them a chance to start at the bottom and stay there.
Right. Yeah, that's my biggest suggestion. Because it is a huge undertaking. Like, you know, I mean, it looks great to plant some seeds and they come up. But then, you know, you can take care of like a little garden yourself. And then, you know, you have to grow so much to make a profit.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, that just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of listeners who are going to want to escape city life and come work with you.
Come on out.
So tell us, how can they find you, whether it's in person, online? How can people connect with you?
Okay. We're on Facebook, Big Rigs Farm. And we're also on there with Flying Buck Distillery is the name of our distillery.
Mm.
And then we're at the Old Town Alexandria Farmers Market every Saturday, and the Cascades Farmers Market in Sterling every Sunday, Leesburg every Saturday, and we're at, there's another farmers market in Durwood in Maryland that we're at on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then tomorrow we are at, I'm trying to remember where it is. I had to drive there. it's I can't remember off.
That's
right.
Okay.
Maybe it might come to me again.
What's the town in West Virginia that your farm's in?
We're closest to Augusta, West Virginia.
Okay, Augusta. Yeah. Great. Well, yeah. We're going to link to all of that on our show notes. We write up a blog post after each episode and link to all of these resources.
Okay.
So I'll put you there. And Gary, how can people connect with you and learn more about your work?
Well, farmcreditcut.com is out there. And, you know, we're a resource too, and it's not just borrow money, but farm credit loan officers are frequently farmers themselves, and they've seen a lot of businesses and have a great deal of experience. And if a person is thinking about going into a farm business, calling up a local farm credit office and just talking to a loan officer and saying, I got an idea, what do you think, is a great conversation to have real early in a planning stage. So I encourage people to go to farmcredit.com and find a local office.
Amazing. So this show is actually based on a bi-weekly newsletter that we send out at Curate called The Tidbit. And in it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. 5 quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So if you're eager to learn more tidbits of knowledge around the food and beverage industry, starting and growing a business, or entrepreneurship lessons learned, sign up today. Head over to curate.co, curate.co. And until next time, everyone, I want you to remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at Full Service RDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.